Ready?
Good.
All right. Movie talk.
Movie talk.
All right. First things first. How did you get involved with the Sushi Girl?
That's a good question, actually. I had done another film called The Black Waters of Echoes Pond in 2007, 2008 with Electra Avalon. And a few years after that movie, her and her boyfriend, Nicholas Cole, started producing films and started putting things together. And they had met Kern and Destin and Cern and Neil, got the script for Sushi Girl, which they co-produced. They were looking for actors. And so they basically recommended me to Kern and Destin, who Kern and Destin, turns out fortunately for me, that they knew who I was and liked me. So they were very excited about, you know, sending me the script. And then when I got it, I was very excited to meet them and with the opportunity to do a script like this and a character like this, which is different than what I normally do. And I kind of just got the script, read it, called them up, said, yeah, that's it, I'm in. If you'll have me, I'll be there. At that point, Annie McKenzie was attached, David Dastmalchian was attached, as well as Tony Todd was in negotiations. And that was all, I think that solidified everything for me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love stories like that.
It's great, you know, because you never really know where your jobs are going to come from. Especially with the way technology and multimedia has changed, not just the film business, but everything in the last 10 years. So you got to find new avenues and ways to, you know, how do you get to these other directors and filmmakers and work when it doesn't follow the normal process of auditions and sending out information and breakdowns. And then it kind of does become that whole, you know, that old Hollywood story, who you know.
Yeah. Without giving too much away about what happens in the movie, there's a lot of intensity. How do you tackle the intensity of those scenes and with what your character going through, a bit of interesting things which we won't reveal?
Yes, we'll keep that twist for the film.
What is the method to your madness?
Well, what's so great is like we really developed this very close-knit type family where we trust each other and we felt that we could make suggestions, and there wasn't anything we necessarily couldn't suggest. We may not do it, but we were all open to everything. So the first thing we kind of did was sat down when we all met and finally cast the film. And we started to talk about our characters, what wasn't in the script, how we knew each other, what brought us there, what was our backstory. When we started to establish things like that, which you don't see in the movie, it kind of creates this whole other new dimension and helps build on that intensity. Because now you have a conflict that fits into the theme of the film and in the screenplay, but you've added a base foundation to it which is not talked about in the film. So without giving much away about the film, what I could say, like one of the pieces of the backstory is Noah's character Fish was brought into the gang by me. And we don't explain that, we don't tell you that in the movie, but it's something we established early on, which when certain events come into play, you can see why I'm not comfortable with it.
Yes, and I did pick up on those things.
Yeah, and that's great because it's like, that's, you know, I think that, you know, not just for me, but I think for all of us, it was really important for us to really create, you know, it almost sounds cliche, oh, my backstory of my character, but it's true, it really is everything. Why are we there? How did we get there? And what are our relationships with each other before what anybody sees? And without us explaining that on screen.
Yeah, that worked. I picked up on it because as certain things are happening, there's points where I'm like, okay, he's reacting in a specific way. I think I know what's going on. There's something, you know, this and that. So it does work, and there is a really good chemistry with everyone, whether it be something good or bad, which we won't say. But I think, especially with Tony's character, he's sort of the big boss man, but there's really cool dynamics between him and you and the other guys.
Well, it's thank you so much. I'm so, you know, again, I'm so happy to hear that because it's things like, you know, Tony really was that character. So by the time we started filming, he would call us up or text us in character daily. So when you have Tony Todd, you know, as Duke, talking to you as Duke, it's kind of hard not to react. You know, it kind of brings your character out of yourself as well.
So did he make you a bit scared? Or uneasy?
Made us all a little uneasy at times, because you weren't really sure who you were talking to, but it was coming out very strong. Like, he's very, very, like, he's a strong, extremely strong actor and strong performer. And his intensity is a tremendous amount of intensity.
Yeah, he brought so much. Even if he's not doing anything, his presence does a lot. I think it really reflects on...
And as him being the leader, of course, you know, you find the same intensity for Andy's character and Mark Hamill's character in a different way, and my character in a different way, and Noah Hathaway's character. And it affects us all differently, but it creates this intensity which all of us feel. So it's easier, much easier to kind of generate and keep organic.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tony, for scaring us.
Yeah, he scared me earlier because he did the Candyman voice.
Oh, yes.
He gave me chills.
There was a point, I gotta say, there was a point when he was doing the Candyman voice, and then I started doing a voice, and I'd love to see those outtakes, because it just became a bunch of, fuck you, no you, why are you doing this, are you gonna, it's your turn, are you in, I'm eating.
You're making me get chills. You do a good Candyman. Alrighty, now to think of where we're at, I did have a good question. Now I can't even remember.
Mark.
He was interesting. I didn't recognize it was him for like 15 minutes.
That's so, I think
how
that's the greatest
amazing.
Compliment you can give an actor is to actually not recognize
him. Talk about a chameleon.
But, yeah,
wow. I imagine he would have been very interesting and he had fun.
We
by
had,
the looks of it.
Well, not only did we have a blast, but to be honest, it's like we couldn't really talk about his looks. We were trying to keep it secret, so we didn't want the pictures to leak. And we're sitting there, and this transformation was pretty quick. So by the time that we started shooting in day one, and he came in with those extensions, it was wild to be working with him. And
wow.
That created a whole other intensity. So there's this guy that is so influential to all of us as actors and as fans of the original Star Wars movies growing up. And here he is right in front of us, like, we have never seen him. I mean, in Marcy, you say yourself, you didn't recognize him for 15 minutes.
I was a bit embarrassed, but, yeah.
No, it's. I think that's what makes it work on such a high level, because of that transformation, and you don't feel this. There isn't the stigma attached to Luke Skywalker or Star Wars anymore. And if you have that, it'll pull you out.
Yeah, he really disappeared, and... It worked.
And
because I didn't pick up it was him, and then I forgot it was him. Then up until the end, I was like, wow, what a chameleon.
It's incredible. And
he was intense, and...
And we all said it, you know, we were watching him film the scenes, and we just kept looking at each other after, you know, sitting behind the monitor with Kern, and like, yeah, I think he's just successfully killed Luke Skywalker. No one's going to look at Mark quite the same after they see this ever again.
No, especially with the few things that he does, which I did talk about with Noah earlier. I felt a bit sensitive, insert areas, what he does. There's another one that I have in my head.
Maybe about Noah?
Huh? Yeah.
Well,
what's it like with him, especially with he was kind of away from
He's now my best friend. He's like one of my best friends. Like all of us are best friends, but Noah and I became really close. I met him a few years back, which was a big thing for me. We were going to do a film that ended up falling apart.
Mm.
But not only did I always want to work with him, but in all honesty, growing up, you know, Noah was Atreyu. He was boxy, you know, and Battlestar Galactica. He was the kid I wanted to be Noah when I was young. And so when I got the opportunity to, you know, meet him, and he was so awesome when I met him, and we clicked right away, and we just became instant friends. And that's one of the highlights, I think, about, you know, this business is being able to work and meet and become friends with people that you admire and inspire you. And Noah was very much that, still that to me now, even after being close friends with him for quite a few years now.
I think it comes off as well when, like, seeing you on screen.
You love him like a brother.
You can see... There's a bit of a connection.
Yeah, I love him like a brother. He's an amazing person. He really is.
And this might be a bit odd, but the movie has some really awesome effects. It's quite disgusting.
Yeah, no,
how was that whole thing?
Well, we were very fortunate. The special effects makeup, Vincent Christini and George Frangadakis, who was working with him, are an extremely talented pair of people. Vinny especially has been doing it for so long, and it's his effects company. And, you know, what they were able to do with so little, I don't think we would have gotten from anybody else. We didn't really have a lot of money while we were making the film. We were very limited. So it was very, very important to get the right effects people in there who not only understood what we were trying to make, but knew how to do it and do it to a high effect.
Mm. When I saw, not that I'm going to spoil certain things, I could feel that pain. It looked and felt awesome. It's a good-looking movie.
We were very, very, very lucky. You know, Mark said it best. He said, this is the little movie that could. That's how he describes it.
It is.
And, you know, I like to think about things like that instead of, like, it's something like being up for this challenge of, like, okay, you're in this, you know, like, as Independence Day, you know, for instance, this huge promoted studio film that, you know, I loved and had a great time making it and whatnot, but, you know, it's almost the studio and the distribution and whatnot, it all sells itself. Mm. That's where Sushi Girl, it's like we are fighting every element of getting the movie out there every step of the way, from pre-production, getting the money, you know, because we almost didn't make the movie. Very close to not making it. We were going to shoot it a year before, didn't have enough money, put it on the back burner. Usually those movies never come back. And it came back.
It's amazing how many times I've heard that when talking to the filmmakers for the independent awesome movies that I help promote and review, and I get told a lot of that, or the budget went into something they didn't expect, and like, how are we going to get the rest of it made?
It's
interesting.
It's absolutely, you know, you're absolutely right, and it's so true, and it's frightening in a sense, because you hear people say it, but until you really start working on film, that's when you realize it's very tough. Even the things you don't like when you start making movies, to start really judging, critiquing somebody else, because to finish a film in itself is a miracle and a feat, because you have 50, 60, 70 different people doing all these different jobs, and it's all got to come together at the end. And when you start thinking of it on those, in those terms, you're like, how does it ever get done?
Yeah. So what reaction did you have when you first got to see the finished product?
Well, when we were making it, you know, we all felt very confident about what we were making. At least we knew we believed in it and we loved what we were doing. But we weren't really sure what, you know, it exactly would look like or how people would react to it. So after we saw it the first time, it was kind of, it's almost like, what would be a good analogy for it? You plant a seed and you expect the flower to come up, and instead of the flower you get a bushel of roses. That was almost kind of what it was. It ended up being so much more than we anticipated or expected. And like I said, you know, we felt confident about what we were doing. But Kern and Destin and Fritz, who did the music.
Wonderful.
I mean, what these guys did in the post process was just take the film again to another level. So by the time it came back to us to watch it, there was all these other elements that we weren't aware of.
It's the color palette in the movie is amazing.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It's a beautiful movie to look at, things that happen.
Kern's, he's a fantastic director, and it's an amazing first film. And I'm very, very curious to see what he does next. And I'm available for him if you'd like to hire me.
We'll make sure he gets that memo. if we could maybe just venture off of the Sushi Girl.
Absolutely.
Maybe if you're able to reveal what you might be working on in the future.
Absolutely. I've been very fortunate. So I have three more features until about November. One of them is a sequel to a film I had done in the late 90s. It's kind of a cult film in the United States and Europe. It's called SLC Punk. And James Merendino, the writer-director, and Matthew Lillard, and Jason Segel, and Michael Corgian, sort of the movie had this. When we did it, it was meant as a standalone film. Mm. And it kind of created this whole kind of cult following. And in a weird way, no movie since then that's come out, at least for our generation and people that we know, that's been anything close to that.
Mm.
And You know, I know Matthew and James were talking about it for years, but when James finally, you know, decided that he was going to write the script and he sent it to us, you know, I didn't know what to think of how you could do a sequel to a film about punk rock set in the 80s and 90s in Salt Lake City. But he did. He sent me one of the best scripts I've ever read.
Whoa.
And shocked me in quite a few ways. With it being an independent film, but still being about punk rock. And how do you be, since it's set now, when our characters are in their 40s, how is that punk rock? Where does that fit in? It's different when you're in high school and in college and you're searching for your identity and you find a group of like-minded people and you're rebelling against the repression, rebelling against these things that you don't believe in, that you stand for something. How do you find that rebellion or fight against that kind of repression when you're living in your 40s with children and a house and bills to pay and you have responsibilities and there's nothing punk rock about any of that?
There is an interesting movie that has those elements, and I can't think of what it's called. I'm going to have to look it up. It's a French movie where there's a guy, he doesn't want to give up the whole punk thing, and he's like on the streets, and there's this whole relationship with him getting his brother on board. It's really interesting. It's sort of reminding me of what you're saying, and I'm like, yeah, they...
Well, it's good because...
That's an interesting concept.
Absolutely, and you can see that it translates as not just an American thing, because this is a French film doing this. So it becomes more of, like, how do you find your place to stand up for what you still believe in a system that you don't believe in?
Yeah.
And in that, in itself... I sort of was very extremely taken aback by the content and the manner of the script from which he wrote. It's so the SLC Punk sequel is called Punk's Dead, meant very sarcastically.
Mm-hmm.
There's another film that I'm getting ready, preparing to do. It's called Flex, sort of almost a super agent movie. It's like a bunch of super agents, and I'm the bad guy.
Oh.
The ex-super agent that doesn't, in a weird way, doesn't believe in the system anymore and doesn't believe in what the agents are doing. So he kind of rebels against all of that and all of them. So I'm looking forward to making that, which is, again, something a little bit different for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, super secret bad agent.
I like it.
And then finally, one of the next films that I'll be doing after those two in the fall, which we don't have all the money yet, but we almost have it all together. It's called Death of an Angel, set in the 60s, and I would be playing a drag queen, Sally O'Sullivan, who's been accused of murdering his lover, or her lover. Mm. And thrown in jail, and as the detective is trying to uncover the truth of the murder behind this boy that he was involved with, he starts, you know, it starts off with him believing that, you know, and all the evidence pointing to him being the murderer, but starts to maybe believe that it's something else. You know, what makes it interesting is it's set in the 60s, in the time of Stonewall, and you definitely couldn't be openly drag queen or openly gay. So I find it very interesting subject matter to be set in that time.
Mm.
And with this police officer detective who's conflicted by all of this, including his own sexuality. And I thought that was fascinating.
You said the magic word drag queen.
Yeah.
Well, that two words.
well,
I'm sold, so...
And then you know, I've been very fortunate. I've been working a lot. I just finished filming a movie with Martin Landau and Michael Gladys from Mad Men, Alexis DeZegna and Harold Perrineau, called Without Ward. And it's set an indeterminate amount of time in the future when half of the population of the world has gone to sleep on a wonder drug. And they're supposed to live out the rest of their lives in this wonder drug. And after 20 years, half the population wakes up. And they've been confined to house arrest, and they find that they've awakened into a world that's been taken over by contractualism.
Everything's have an interesting career.
I've been very, well, thank you, Mums. I've been very fortunate to get the opportunity to tackle a lot of different subject matters in a lot of different genres with a great varied amount of wonderful actors and actresses that I've loved and admired for so long. So I just consider myself extremely lucky.
Yeah, you have one of those faces that it's all... I mean, I remember you from so many things, but you always pop up. And it's always awesome.
Oh, thank you, Marcy.
Yes. I might bring it to an end with the final little subject, which would be, I think, your early days with Greg.
Greg Rocky.
Yeah.
That's my formative years, I like to call those. And... Yeah, I learned a lot from Greg, actually. He was the punk rock director, making really true independent film before you had the media and the technology that we have available to us now. So being raised with the inside the business at a very young age with that mentality of making what you want to make, not compromising, and sticking to your integrity, which is a very difficult thing for most people to do, even then. And Greg did it effortlessly. And I didn't realize it until I got a little bit older how lucky and fortunate I was to be raised under that influence, which has a strong influence on me and the roles I choose and how I conduct my career because of that. You know, so I have this whole other outlook on what being an actor and what making movies is than I think a lot of people have. You know, that's why I was saying earlier, you know, that's such a great compliment to hear. You didn't recognize him for 15 minutes. He transformed himself. That's being an actor.
Mm.
Not worrying about how you look, but really giving yourself to the role and giving yourself to
you
the role.
You do many different things. Like, I don't see, I mean, as I said, I do recognize you, but I don't see you. I see characters.
Oh, thank you.
I mean,
oh, I love you.
Thank you. You can keep hugging me. I'm not going to say anything. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's funny because it's, you know, going from like Doom Generation, and then, I mean, I was quite young when that came out.
Probably, I was quite young when we made it.
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously not old enough to be watching it, but that's, who does that stop these days?
Well, we were hoping that that movie would make it to you, by the way, because we know you're not old enough to watch it, but none of us are old enough to watch any of the things we've ever grown up watching.
Yeah. But then it's like, you know, I would see you in something else, and then later on it would click, that's the Doom Gen.
I love that, though, because it means that at least my attempt to create characters and to transform and do what Mark had done in Sushi Girls, I'm growing and learning from that.
I mean, the one time I automatically knew it was you was May, even with the best hairstyle ever.
I remember that. It took 3 hours to do my hair like that and 3 days to wash out.
Should I try it with my long
locks? My hair was almost as long as yours. Not quite as long, not quite as beautiful, but my hair was pretty long then. And yeah, it was quite a feat to get it to stick up like that.
Was it, I mean, that, I know I said I'd end it off, but I have to ask you what that was like. I mean, you were only in it briefly.
Yeah.
But what was that like? That's one of my favorite movies, and you know, I told you yesterday I did get to speak to Lucky about it.
She's
but,
so
you know,
great.
From your perspective, I mean, what's that like coming onto that and doing what you were doing, and then your character ends up in an interesting situation pretty quickly? That was like, whoa.
Well, you know, I think the script, when I read the script, I was taken by the script. It was so unique and original and different, and you could really hear Lucky's voice shine through, as well as Angela's performance. When I had started to audition for Lucky, and we just realized that we really loved hanging out and talking about movies and working on what May was together, and we actually couldn't stop laughing. Like, we just had such a great time that it became this dynamic of, well, now we have to work together, because it's like, wow, how often is it this good between a performer and the director? Not very often. And not even that it's bad, but to have the kind of rapport that I was very fortunate to have with Lucky, of just having a blast making a very weird, crazy movie. And with Angela, who I'd known for quite a few years, actually. So it was I felt quite an accomplishment to be working with her as well. You know, and you watch her performance in that, and I can only be proud of being a part of that.
Yeah.
And for allowing them to give me the opportunity to be a part of it.
Well, you mean your name is on the cover, so it's appeal. James is in it, better go see it. It's one of my favorites. I'm glad that you're in it.
Did you ever get a chance to see Roman?
I haven't seen that one, Roman, which I really want to.
Lucky acts and Angela directs.
I don't remember if I spoke to him about it, but yeah, we spoke about many things. He is just
Lucky's
a
awesome.
Really amazing person, and he...
I love hearing him laugh. That's what makes me want to... I just want to make him laugh all the time. He's got the greatest laugh in the world.
He's really just such a great person, but...
Actually, you know, you owe me a text, Lecky. I texted you a few months ago, and you didn't text me back. But he very well may be filming.
Oh, We've gone for 25 minutes.
It feels like 5 minutes.
Really? Do you want to say anything else? What do you want to say to your Australian fans?
Thank you for having me. I would very much like to come back here.
Have you been here before?
This is my very first time.
Really?
Yeah. I know, I can't believe it's taken me this long. But my friends are right. He's like, when you go, you're not going to want to come back. And I'm not ready to go back.
Melbourne's the city to be in.
That's what we've been saying.
That's why I moved here.
The weather's great. The people are great. The food's great. The architecture, the city, everything. It's gorgeous.
The city is
here.
A really beautiful city.
It's gorgeous.
The weather, you've been lucky. We've had awful weather.
Well, it's fall now, isn't it? You're moving into fall.
Yeah. It's still kind of, it feels like summer.
Yeah, it's a bit humid since I've been here.
Ugh, I hate it. Melbourne weather is, yeah. You've been lucky.
Even for that and other places I've been, this is still incredible.
Yeah.